For Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSM.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. It is Monday. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show, the 13th of January, 2020. My name is Richie Allen. Thanks for joining me. As usual, I've got a couple of very interesting guests lined up for you today. And your participation, as usual, on Twitter is very welcome. I look forward to reading your tweets. Live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and multiple other platforms, this is your Richie Allen Radio Show. Good evening.
Fabulous.
It's all good.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, to get stuck into this royal family nonsense, is there something more to it than meets the eye? The great Tony Gosling, BCFM, the politics show there in Bristol, one of the last journalists left in the UK. Tony will join me, not just to talk about that, but to talk about the news. We'll round up the news in general, what's been happening today and over the last few days. Tony Gosling joins the programme. Dean Henderson is a brilliant writer, a brilliant author, and a terrific geopolitical analyst. Did you know that Henderson, lefthook.wordpress.com is no more? WordPress threw out the site, leaving Dean Henderson, well, without a website for the first time in years. Obviously, there was no good reason for that. We'll talk to Dean about that in the second hour, and we'll get his take on what's been happening with Iran as well. So Dean Henderson live from Missouri in the second hour of Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Yeah, there you are. Yeah, there you are. Yeah, Henderson left Hook, the latest independent content creator to have their website shut down or their YouTube channel deleted. And I will always stick up for, well, for the legitimate ones. What do I mean by legitimate ones? I mean, I'll stick up for everybody. Doesn't matter what you say. Doesn't matter how awful it is what you are saying. I'll stick up for you anyway. But I have special, obviously, I have a special fondness for the good guys and the good gals, the ones who do it properly. Really good journalists. And Dean Henderson is one of those. And he's the latest good journalist, very good journalist, to have his website deleted. It's Ah, look, if I say it's terrifying, you'll say, you know. Really, is it really? It is. We'll get into that with Dean in the second hour of the programme. Right, it's miserable out there. I think we're getting the tail end of Storm Brendan here in Salford in Greater Manchester. It's belting it down. We've got very high winds. We're well insulated here in the studio, so you can't hear it unless I open the door. And it's only if I open the door will you be able to hear. But well, I open the door so you can hear a bit of Storm Brendan. Do you want to hear a bit of Storm Brendan? Go on, then. You see? And if I close the door, it's gone. That's Storm Brendan out there in Salford. Here we go again. Yeah? Yeah, Storm Brendan. I know. I crack myself up. I don't crack anybody else up. Someday I'll crack other people up. And I'll have made it. The sweet sound of Storm Brendan. Let's get to the news. 6.5 minutes past the hour. The royal family. This made me laugh. We always try and laugh, don't we, you and me, on Monday. Monday's monologue is like the Monday club without the beer. You have to laugh. Because if you don't laugh, well, you'll just go postal and climb to the top of the nearest building with a 22 caliber rifle and fucking kill everybody. So you have to laugh. Sky News presenter Colin Brazier. I like Colin, actually. Up there with Kay. I love Kay. And I love Colin. Colin has been at Sandringham all day long, where the royal family are in winter retreat. And allegedly, the Queen sat down today with Juggiers, Jimmy Savile's best pal, Charles, and William, the oldest son of Charles, and Harry, who's married to Meghan Markle. And of course, this is allegedly about the couple, Harry and Meghan, deciding to leave the royal family. So the media is, you know, camped at Sandringham today. And Colin Brazier was live there this afternoon. And he was speaking to a royal expert. And as the royal expert is finishing his sentence, the presenter, again on location at Sandringham, remember, is interrupted by a member of the public. And I just love this stuff.
It's really hearing what Harry wants or thinks he wants.
So you're just to set it up again, you're hearing the final few seconds of the Royal Correspondent's answer, and then he'll hand over live to Colin, who's at Sandringham. And I love it.
Harry wants, or thinks he wants, how he thinks he it should go about it. And then it'll be spelled out what the royals think, the royals being the Queen, Prince Charles and Prince William. So it's a very complex negotiation with no result, and I'm very much aligned today.
Dickie, do you know what? I think we're going to hand back to London because there's somebody who's just got a loudspeaker.
Why are we handing back to London?
Negotiation with no result, and I'm very much aligned today.
When we're talking about paedophiles.
Dickie, do you know what? I think we're going to hand back to London because there's somebody who's just got a loudspeaker who's saying, making defamatory comments. Back to you, Sarah Jane.
Dickie, we're going to go back to Sarah Jane because there's a bloke standing behind me calling the royal family a shower of paedophiles. The public are wising up to the 24-hour soap operas which masquerade as news channels. And the public are finding these fuckers when they're on location and throwing a few truth bombs at them. Yes, lad. Paedophiles. That's worth hearing again. I love this.
It's really hearing what Harry wants.
Whatever Harry wants, Harry gets.
Thinks he wants, how he thinks he it should go about it. And then it'll be spelled out what the royals think.
And by the way, if you watch the video back, the guy with the loudspeaker is watching Sky News live on his smartphone.
The royals being the Queen, Prince Charles and Prince William. So it's a very complex negotiation with no result, and I'm very much aligned today.
Dickie, do you know what? I think we're going to hand back...
I'm standing behind the Sky News presenter. They're a bunch of paedophiles. Yes, they are. Well, I can't say they're a bunch of paedophiles. We know they love a good paedophile, though, in the royal family. Max Egan and the fires in Australia. Max has dropped a couple of videos which I've been watching today and they're very, very interesting. On Thursday last, Max said to me that he believes geoengineering chemtrail spraying is accelerating the fires. He never said that chemtrails start the fires. Apparently some of my friends in the independent media have been saying that Max said that chemtrails started the fires. I haven't heard the clips now of my friends, the Trigger Warning Boys, but he didn't say that. He clearly said the detritus, the build-up in the bush for decades of scrub that hasn't been cleared, creates fuel. He then said fires are set deliberately, and he said they might be or are being accelerated by spraying. I haven't seen what Hayden and Graham were saying. It doesn't matter what, in terms of, everybody's entitled to their opinion anyway. But he never said that chemtrails create these fires. I don't think Hayden Hewitt would have said that anyway. As to climate change, here's Pauline Hanson of Australia's One Nation Party. She was on Australia's Today Show and she's talking a bit of sense about climate change and the Oz fires. Go girl.
When the forest floors have not been allowed to be cleared or your fire breaks down or the RFS been able to do their job effectively or people building houses can't clear the trees around it because of this legislation, it is ridiculous. It's a build-up of the fuel over the period of time, 30 plus years, that it's come to this stage now. If you're going to have a Royal Commission into it, throw bloody climate change out the window and let's look at the pure facts of why we have had the bushfires, how they were handled, what we can do better to stop it happening again. You know, lowering the emissions as they're dead set on doing. And if you're going to charge people more taxes, how on earth is that supposed to reduce the Earth's temperatures? I'd like to know. And what we're going to do, and I've spoken to the local pubs in the small towns, it's killing them. It's killing the communities. They can't afford the electricity. You've got people moving out of the towns. These are going to become ghost towns.
Very smart woman, isn't she, Pauline Hanson, of this political party, the One Nation Party. She sees the whole thing. Shutting down rural communities, making electricity almost unattainable because of the price, clearing people out. We should have cleared all the scrub, like Max Egan said. We're going to have ghost towns, says Pauline Hanson. Jesus, give that woman a banana.
Most towns.
She's not black, by the way.
What are they going to do then? And as far as, you know, predicting the climate change or it's going to warm 2 to 3 degrees, they can't even get my weather right and tells me it's going to rain. It never doesn't rain. They can't get it right over the 7 or 10 days prediction. They're telling me what it's going to be like in 50 or 100 years' time.
She's brilliant, isn't she? They can't give me the pigging weather forecast that's reliable for a few days. But they want me to believe that in 20 years' time we're all going to die. I love this woman.
I think it's a load of BS.
It's a load of bullshit, love.
And making a lot of people rich over this. And
so you don't think climate change has played any role in the bushfire crisis?
Let's have the truth facts.
The bushfire crisis.
You don't think that climate change has played any role in the bushfire crisis?
The climate is changing. You can't tell me that taxing people, putting up electricity costs is going to change the climate. The climate is changing pure to nature itself and our relation to the sun. If you're fair thinking about climate change, you'd think it's having a big impact on us, and take all the aeroplanes out of the sky, all right? Don't fly aeroplanes. Don't drive cars. Let's really be serious about it if you're going to be. And
yes.
Not destroy people's lives and jobs and industries and manufacturing, because that's where we're headed. Climate change is happening naturally, and that's how the general public feel about it as well. Not to be hoodwinked and lied to. Let the true facts come out.
Okay, let's move on. We're going to keep moving. There's lots happening in terms of government fundraising and also government awareness about a whole manner of issues in relation to this.
Get her off. Get her off. It is the Richie Allen Radio Show, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. I am Richie Allen. It's miserable out there. Jean Ann Crowley, the great Jean Ann herself, has been telling me that I couldn't reach her in Connemara today because the weather was horrendous and power went out on the West Coast. Well, that particular part of the Irish West Coast, apparently the weather was horrendous. We're getting the dying embers of Storm Brendan here in Salford in Greater Manchester. It's been horrendous. Let's just check on it again. How bad is it? Is it still... pouring down out there. Is Storm Brendan still a thing in Salford? Yeah, it is. Yeah, fucking hell. It's bad out there. It's bad out there. Let's move on. I know. The worse it is, the more I'll carry on with it. I don't learn. Iran, all the media, protesters. All the media today talking about protesters in Iran. Anti-regime protesters, they're saying, are taking over. They're fed up of the economic situation in Iran. None of these news organisations like Sky or the BBC bother to remind their viewers that if there is an economic problem, well, there is in Iran, it's because of the sanctions levied on the country by the great Satan, the United States of America. They don't tell you that bit. They just say that people are taking to the streets because they're fed up over the cover-up, over the shooting down of the Ukrainian airliner, and also because of economic sanctions, because of the economic situation in the country. And as I said, the news organisations don't mention the sanctions. Listen to Sarah Jane Mee on Sky News, seemingly introducing a debate between two men. But she's editorialising the bejesus out of the segment. Listen to this.
Let's talk about Iran now. We're used to seeing protests against the West, but demonstrations in the country's capital are being aimed at the regime over its apparent attempts at a cover-up over the shooting down of a Ukrainian airliner, killing all 176 people on board. So will these anti-government protests be the catalyst for real change in Iran? To discuss this, I'm joined by the consultant editor at The Independent, Ahmed Abadou, and Professor at Tehran University, Mohammed Mirandi. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you both. Mohammed, I'll come to you first, if I may. What do you make of this change of mood in Tehran in terms of these protests? It wasn't so long ago the people on the streets were chanting death to America. Now they're protesting against the regime.
The regime, she says.
Well, first of all, I don't think using the term regime is very useful. You don't call the French state a regime. I don't think that these protests amount to any serious change in sentiments in Tehran, and I don't think that most people would agree with your assessment that there's a cover-up. Initially, some people did think so, but when the explanations came out, those sentiments decreased. The Iranians, from the very beginning, after the downing of the plane and before any announcement was made, they invited the international teams, including the Ukrainians, and they preserved the black box. If they wanted to cover anything up, they could have destroyed the black box and they could have prevented these teams from coming in the name of war or sensitive military intelligence and secrets that have to be kept and that sort of thing. So I think after a day or two, sentiments began to change. And those people on the streets last night and the night before, they were tearing up the posters of the general who was murdered by the Americans. And the people who went to his funeral in Tehran alone were somewhere between 5 and 7 million. So I would say that the feelings for the general haven't changed.
Yeah, Mohammad Mirandi there of Tehran University. There was a guy from The Independent involved in that debate as well. He basically said the opposite, that these protests are serious, blah, 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 blah. About 1,000 people. Millions turned out for the funeral. Terrible thing that Iran did. And I'm going to be honest, you know, the thing that Iran should have done very early on was say, listen, we made a terrible mistake here and we shot the airliner down. I think Mohammad Mirandi, and I admire him, I've invited him on the programme, he's being a bit disingenuous, saying there was no cover-up at all. Okay, they fessed up. But they fessed up when video evidence emerged of the missile strike hitting the plane. So, you know, nobody is angelic in any country. None of these, you know, governments anywhere in the world are ultimately any good. I favour the Iranian government in the region because it's never attacked one of its neighbours, not in 5 centuries. It's not any threat to peace in the region. Iran should be left alone. That's what I believe. 20 minutes it is, coming up to 20 minutes past the hour. I was going to get into Jess Phillips, who is among the Labour leadership candidates. The nominations closed today, didn't it, for the Labour leadership? And I'll tell you now very briefly what you've got. You've got Emily Thornberry, who very late on secured enough nominations. The threshold, you have to have 22 backers, 22 MPs. So Thornberry will contest the Labour leadership with Keir Starmer, Rebecca Long-Bailey, Lisa Nandy, and Jess Phillips. So there you are. Sometime in early April, you'll know who the next leader of the Labour Party will be. Not that it matters a damn, dear listener. Good afternoon to you. Good afternoon. Hi to Samantha Louise. Hi to Amanda Thompson. Hi to Francis Leader. I had a lovely tweet from Francis Leader yesterday. What a wonderful woman she is. She's been on the programme a few times talking about the radioactive waste that is an offshoot of drilling for oil, how it's been covered up, how it's affected people like Francis, her husband and others. Right, very important stuff, wonderful woman. Somebody from Rolling Stone magazine allegedly, well, I won't say allegedly because Francis told me, heard Francis speaking on this programme and flew to the UK to interview her for a book that he's writing and an article for Rolling Stone magazine. So that was a nice thing to hear as well. Hi to Kuryakin 501, who's excited to be listening live to the programme for a change. How you doing, pal? Hi to Mark Wilde, to Lorraine. Hi to John Rorty in New York. How you doing, John? Hope all is well with you and your fella, my friend. Storm Brendan, it's absolutely... Hang on a second, Storm Brendan. We have to check it out. I heard some heavy rainfall against the studio windows there. Let's just hear if Storm Brendan is still raging outside. Is it? Yeah, fucking hell, that's bad. And again... Yeah, Storm Brown, I'm not going outside for a while. 22 minutes past the hour. Right. Give over, you fucking child. All right, I'll give over. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm Richie Allen. It's the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. How you doing? Tony Gosling is next after this. Don't go anywhere. Everything but the girl on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 25 and a half minutes past five. Yes, 13th. It is not easy for me to say the 13th of January 2020. The one of the last standing, objective, brilliant journalists left in the UK today, Tony Gosling, presenter of the politics show on BCFM, thisweek.org.uk, former BBC journalist, as honest as the day is long. Love having him on. Just before we say hello to him, it is being reported by the BBC that the Queen has agreed a period of transition in which the Duke and Duchess of Sussex will spend time in Canada and the UK. The Queen is entirely supportive, that's a quote, of their desire for a new role, but she would have preferred them to remain full-time working royals. More work to be done, says the Queen, but she expects final decisions to be made in the coming days. Tony Gosling meant every word of that, by the way. Welcome back to the programme. Good to have you, my friend. Should we expect something nasty to happen to Harry and Meghan in the next 12 to 18 months? I don't say that for giggles and all the rest of it. What do you make of this story? I was dismissing this as a nonsense, but I think it's more serious than I was given it credit for. What do you think?
Well, it definitely is more serious, I think, Richie. I'm just taking a step back from the whole situation with Meghan and Harry and the royals. I would suggest that Harry is a bit of a free spirit. He's not been under so much pressure as William to be part of the family, you know, that's like the royal mafia. And I would suggest that Meghan is a deliberate attempt to control that rebel spirit within Harry. Looking at her face, just literally the body language during the wedding, she didn't look to me as if she had any love for Harry. She looked to me like a gold digger, somebody who's just in there to make something of the situation. It could be Harry's vulnerable. But the most important thing is that she has slowly but surely shown herself to be an absolutely reprehensible character. And also she's been playing the race card as well, saying, for example, we got one of the best radio presenters in the world, certainly in the English language, Danny Baker, somebody that worked at Great London Radio when I was there years ago, fantastic guy.
Yeah.
He is sacked from the BBC for what is not a racist post, but she apparently decided that this was racism and she wanted this guy punished.
How do we know that Meghan Markle had anything to do with Danny Baker's dismissal?
Well, because I would assume that there was something to do, that she would have had something to do with that. The BBC would not have made such an important decision without consulting with the royals. Remember, this is a royal charter the BBC is convened under, and there's very close relationship between the royal family and the BBC. There always has been. So the idea because the thing is, they have to do that sort of thing, because if the BBC were to sack the guy and she was to then come out and say, I think this is wrong, this would leave the BBC with egg on their face. So they have to have these back channels. And I think it's almost, of course you can't prove these things. I'm just trying to use a little bit of educated guesswork and see the sort of things that have happened in the past. Look at the relationship between the royal family and the BBC.
Yeah.
And it's 99% back channels, and only 1% is what we actually, as the public, get to see, or even as journalists get to see. So that's why I think, she has been also part of creating this massive, lots of publicity around herself and some kind of rift. But the most important thing is to see what's happened with her and her family and her friends, because she's cut all of them off, really. There's a few of her friends left who are supportive of her come what may. But particularly the whole thing with her father and the letter that she sent to her father. And then she misrepresented that letter through her and her friends in the press, saying various things that she didn't say in the letter, and really forced her father to hand the letter over to the Daily Mail so that that he could show, look, well, actually what she said in this letter is completely opposite of what she's been saying. But anyway, so I'm not a great fan of Piers Morgan, but I agree with him. She's a splitter. She's in there to create rifts and splits, and she's done that with her friends, with her family, with Prince William, it seems. And basically she's been forcing Harry to choose between her and her friends, family, royals, and William too. So I would suggest you've got a bit of a free spirit with Harry. What we've got with her is someone who's been deliberately sent in to him in order to create as much rift as possible.
Let's talk in a second about who might have sent in this woman. Hold that thought, because I want to play a 40-second clip. It's only 40 seconds. Now I know you will have heard this clip, but I want to get your reaction to it. This is a clip of Prince Harry on an ITV documentary last October, where he said, I'm guessing you'll know what you're going to hear. It's only 40 seconds long. Have a listen to this, because my listeners tell me that I undersell this. I think this is Much Ado About Nothing. But my listeners tell me that this is Harry basically coming clean and saying, I know more about my family than you think. Have a listen, T. It's only 40 seconds and then you can take over again. Here's the clip from ITV.
You know, my mum clearly taught me a certain set of values of which I will always try and uphold, despite the role and the job that sometimes that entails, if you know what I mean. But I think I will always protect my family, and now I have a family to protect. So everything that she went through and what happened to her is incredibly raw every single day, and that's not me being paranoid, that's just me not wanting a repeat of the past. And if anybody else knew what I knew, be it a father, be it a husband, be it anyone, you'd probably be doing exactly what I'm doing as well.
What did he mean by that, Tony?
Well, I think he's trying to make comparisons between his own situation with his family and the press and Diana and the press. And I don't honestly think that that's comparable. I can't see it personally. I don't think Meghan Markle is Princess Diana or has any of the same sort of characteristics as her at all. That's why I think Meghan seems to me to be somebody who's been deliberately targeting Harry, you know, not only just to make money, but also to make sure that any kind of rift, really to isolate him, I suppose. And of course, the best way to isolate Harry is to have somebody who's causing all sorts of trouble with others of his relations very close in. But the other thing I would say is that Harry, I would suggest, may... You know, he's obviously very troubled by the secrecy that is expected of him in the royal family. And I think that's maybe one of the main reasons that this was almost inevitable that this was going to happen at some time. And I don't think Meghan is really helping.
You don't believe...
Making it worse.
Tony Gosling is our guest, by the way. A number of tweets have come in suggesting that Tony is only speculating that Markle... did for Danny Baker. He is speculating, but to be fair to Tony, he's a BBC journalist. He was, and he understands the back channels that exist between the monarchy and the BBC, so he's based it on his own understanding of that. But yeah, a number of tweeters, for want of a better word, are saying that's only speculation. Let me ask you this. So you don't think there's any case to be made that when he said, if people knew what I knew... You see, I agreed with you. I took it that he just meant things were very difficult for my mother. But there are people saying that because he's moved away, he's gone with Markle. It takes two to tango. It's not just Markle getting her hooks into him. He wanted an escape because he holds his family responsible for the death of his mother. That this is some sort of Hamlet thing. And again, I don't say that for a laugh here. He might believe, Tony, that his family were... implicitly involved in his mother's demise. He might do.
Yes, I think he might. And I have no problem with that at all. I just think that the whole situation with Meghan is likely to steer that in specific directions and possibly further isolate Harry. I feel really quite sorry for the guy. You know, the idea of him sitting in the family's mafia headquarters at Sandringham, being surrounded by the royals on, you know, behind him, in front of him, to the left and to the right. You know, it's almost as if the sword of Damocles is hanging over his head.
Yeah.
But
you loved
better,
Diana,
think,
Tony, didn't you? Sorry to interrupt you again, my friend. I don't like interrupting you. You were a big fan. I mean, everybody I know, in the independent media, the journalists I respect, they really loved Diana. They believed that Diana was genuine, that she had a heart the size of England, and that these charitable things she was doing were genuine. And I think you would go along with that, would you? You believe that this was a special woman.
Most definitely. And I would also recommend to your listeners the book, The Princess Diana Assassination, The Paris-London Connection, by the late John Morgan, who I interviewed several times before he died. I'm not sure if you did. But, I mean, this really does make it absolutely clear that a guy called Sherard Cowper-Coles was brought over to Paris a few weeks before Diana's death and took over the MI6 station in Paris, and was basically the ringleader of what was a murder, an assassination of Diana. I mean, there was nothing was left to chance. After the accident happened and she was still alive, she was put into the ambulance and
murdered on the way to the hospital. In fact, they hadn't killed her by the time they got to the hospital, so the ambulance had to stop. I think it was something like a few hundred yards away from the Paris St. Peter Hospital, and she was killed right there before she was brought into the hospital in the ambulance. So
imagine he knows that, Tony. Imagine living with that. Imagine he knows that. Listen, I want to read you another tweet. We've got loads of time, as you well know. Tony Gosling is our guest. Francis Leader, who's an activist and a campaigner and a regular guest on here. Big fan of yours, Francis, but she says, oh, come on, Tony. Don't you know how much Meghan was doing for good causes before she met Harry? It is wrong to call her a gold digger. She has her own. That just indicates that you have swallowed the fake news media yourself, T, and not researched a woman's past at all.
Listen, I don't follow any media. I'm just making my own conclusions from what I see. And I don't see her as some sort of champion hero. In fact, she's run out on Harry right now, hasn't she? She's left him isolated. Maybe if she had a bit of integrity, she should be in with Harry, standing right next to him whilst the royals are grilling him, because he's been isolated today.
He's stuck there on his own today. Before we move on to talk about Iran, and I love the work you've done on Martin Bormann, by the way, the article. Yeah. We'll talk about that as well. Tony Gosling, BCFM, I mean it, one of the last standing journalists in the United Kingdom. If you don't believe me, listen to Gilad Atzmon, who'll tell you the same thing. Very few guys like Tony Gosling writing and broadcasting in the UK today. Let's then, before we move on, I want to just stay with this. Imagine that chap. If you can leave to one side the privileged upbringing, if you can leave to one side the money, the entitlement, the wealth, all of that, imagine living, as you said, you described it as a mafia. Imagine being there and believing in your heart of hearts that that institution, maybe your grandfather, were responsible for the death of your mother. That'd be enough to drive anybody insane, wouldn't it?
No, not necessarily. I think you might just become rather embittered. And it's quite feasible that the main substance of this rift between Harry and the royals is this inability to address the murder of his mother. I mean, remember, you go back to medieval times and things like the princes in the towers, this kind of thing did happen regularly. The battle for succession, for royal succession, and particularly for influence, things like, you know, the Thomas a Becket being murdered and all these kinds of things. I mean, Diana was a very, very, figure who's right in the middle of the public eye. She was about to marry a Muslim, and she was actually far more popular amongst the public than Prince Charles. I mean, I don't know if I've told you this story before, but I met the pair of them when they were both when Diana was still alive in Salisbury, and there was a big concert which both of them were coming to. Prince Charles arrived in the helicopter, no Diana. Well, there was a sort of groan from the crowd, where's Diana, you know? And she waited about 15, 20 minutes after Prince Charles had got out of the helicopter. Then she stood in the doorway of the helicopter, and the whole crowd, Richie, erupted. Yeah. It's Diana, you know, pointed to her, and Charles was left sort of completely ignored by everyone. And you could see the bitterness on his face. You know, how come everyone loves her and not me? Well, it's because most people, if they didn't know directly, they knew via somebody that he'd been cheating on her. And that the people don't, you know, with Camilla, and maybe they didn't know even if it was specifically her, but their sympathies with her, because she came across as far more sincere. I mean, for example, we had a TV program last night with Prince Charles. I mean, he just comes across as sort of sycophantic and obsequious kind of character that is trying very, very hard to use his powerful position to persuade everyone that he's a lovely guy. Yeah. It just doesn't work.
It might
work in America. It doesn't work here.
I have no doubt that Charles is abused by Mountbatten. Don't laugh, Tony. And I know you wouldn't have expected me to say that, because I know you expect better standards from me. But Mountbatten was a paedophile. Charles spent all his time with him. That whole family is screwed up. Tony Gosling is our guest. The amount of tweets coming in on this, we could be here all day talking about this. It's funny, Tony, you mentioned her grace and her poise and her goodness. She melted Republicans. I mean, I've heard stories of, you know, her meeting senior Republicans and melting. And a very quick story. Before Bono turned into an arsehole, years and years and years and years ago, when U2 had just released the Joshua Tree, before he was, before Bono was groomed by Bill Clinton and Bill Gates, she was at a gig. And Bono said to his dad, Bob Hewson, who was a retired postman from Dublin, and a Republican, Bob, and a hard man, and Bono said, do you want to meet the Princess of Wales? And Bob said, that's like asking me, do I want to meet Oliver Cromwell? He said, fuck off, you know. I don't want to have anything to do with any of them. But anyway, a few minutes later, Diana came over to Bob, Bono's dad, had a glass of champagne with him and had a chat with him. And a few minutes later, Bob Hewson, this Dublin guy, this Republican, was like, unbelievable, lovely woman, lovely, oh, amazing woman, amazing. What a heart. So, yeah, these are mad times, this. So the Queen has apparently said, anyway, yes, they can have their cake and eat it. So you would say that this is damage and imitation by the Crown?
Also, let's not forget that some of her family actually warned Harry about Meghan before the marriage. I mean, these things often get forgotten about. They're saying, look, be careful of her, yeah, because she's actually, we've found her quite a selfish individual. There is also the fact that many of the staff Harry and Meghan have left. They've had a massive turnover of staff. I mean, there's all sorts of indications around that, Harry is basically, what he's trying to do is break out of a cult. I think that's the best way to see it. It's just that she seems to be the person who's helping to manage that process and making it more painful, much more painful than it needs to be. I think they're going to be off to Canada. I think that's where they're heading. I don't think they'll be back.
Good stuff. Tony Gosling is our guest. Right, let's talk about Iran. Today, the UK's commercial and national media is obsessing about protests in Iran, anti-government protests. They're telling us that the people are uprising in Tehran because of what they see as the cover-up, at least the initial cover-up, of the shooting down of the Ukrainian airliner. And also the people are uprising because economic conditions for people, times are pretty tough for people in Tehran. This falls, of course, this all comes after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, the famous general, of course, and the man who many saw might be the successor to Ali Khamenei, or if not the successor to him, certainly the successor to, I should say, Hassan Rouhani. That would make more sense. What's happening here, Tony? Did we dodge a bullet here in terms of, did this nearly escalate to something serious, or is this just the beginning and will 2020 see tensions get worse and eventually a war with Iran? What do you think?
Well, yes, I think it could easily have. I mean, everyone was talking about, I mean, apparently one of the big hashtags last Friday, Saturday was World War III. A lot of young people sharing this, you know, and saying, well, look, this is actually really reckless and really worrying. How would we like it if the chief of the general staff in London from the armed forces was assassinated by a drone from Iran? I mean, this is the way to look at these things. We always just think, well, we've just done this to these people. Well, what if they did it to us? And of course, it is an Archduke Ferdinand moment. You know, this is the sort of thing which can cause a massive, massive escalation, could easily have done. I think I was just reading the weekend, the Saker's blog. He's a guy I've interviewed a couple of times. He's a former military advisor to the United Nations who was telling them things they didn't want to hear. So he got the sack. He now lives in Florida. I think he's originally a Russian guy. But he said, I think, very, very importantly, look, this is a masterful move by Iran. The first time they've really stood up to what he calls the Anglo-Zionist Empire, and they've done it very successfully. In other words, what they did is they made a reprisal against these US air bases, which I thought was, and in fact, humorous even, because this is exactly the air base that Trump had been saying a couple of days before, that, well, if the Iranians want us to leave, then they're going to have to pay us for this airbase that we built. And, of course, the Iranians have now destroyed that airbase, so there's nothing to pay for anymore. So there's a sort of irony in all of that, which I don't think is lost in the Middle East, but it's certainly lost on the Western media. Nobody's picked up on that at all. So the assassination, well, look, there is also another aspect to this. Okay, so lots not to talk about, but Saturday afternoon, there were these protests in Tehran and protests in London. There was no coverage whatsoever on the BBC radio or on the television. I didn't see all the channels, but of the London protests. Big protest at the BBC, over 1,000 people, then marching to Trafalgar Square, speeches by Corbyn, etc., not covered at all. And yet they are covering, of course, the roughly the same size, in fact, demonstration in Tehran. They're covering it absolutely nine to five on Saturday evening. So it's really interesting to see that a protest outside the BBC is not noticed by the BBC, but an equivalent demonstration in Tehran is. So it's very, very clear and obvious you know, that there's an enormous bias in this coverage. And I think this is always what they hope when they do this, that they won't notice what we're not being told. And what we're not being told is that there's an enormous strength of feeling in the UK against this move by Trump and by the deep state in the US to assassinate Soleimani. But look, the most important thing, I think, in much of this coverage, which hasn't really been come out in the West here at all, is the reasons behind it and the background to it, and particularly the idea which has been circulating all over the Middle East, in Iraq, and I suppose it's because it's in a different language, maybe, that the Western press doesn't know it's happening. I don't know if they've got any translators or they can use Google Translate or whatever. But anyway, it's because the Iraqis have said that in September, the Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki went over to China to do a deal with President Xi to help build infrastructure in Iraq, because the Americans have been very, very slow, and also that they're insisting on massive amounts of oil revenue going out as well. So, in other words, we'll rebuild your infrastructure, but you've got to give us your oil. And the Chinese were saying, well, we'll just do a deal for the infrastructure. And so the Iraqis wanted the Chinese deal.
Yeah.
But apparently in September, just a day or so after the Prime Minister got back to Iraq, he was phoned by Trump. And this is what was talked about in the Iraqi parliament last weekend, where the Prime Minister told the MPs that he'd had this phone conversation with Trump, where Trump threatened to cause demonstrations in Baghdad and also threatened to kill him and his defense minister if he signed this deal with China.
No way.
And he is stealing it out, basically. He's saying, no, you're not going to do that. We're going to do this deal with China. And so that's a report which I referenced on my show on Friday at thisweek.org.uk. And this is just a basic bit of translation from the Iraqi language and from Iraqi news into the UK. But that doesn't seem to have
great work, Tony.
Been talked about at all. But the main thing
is... Hey, listen, okay, before we go on, hang on. That's great work, by the way. I didn't know that. Thanks for that. That's really important to know that Chinese... discussion about building infrastructure in Iraq and what that means to the states, the threats made by Trump. That's very, very good. Before you go on that train of thought, though, what a catastrophe in terms of public relations. You were 100% right when you said there was a deep resentment in this country, and no doubt in Ireland and in mainland Europe, about the assassination of Soleimani. The Iranians had the moral high ground. What a screw-up, Tony, shooting down that Ukrainian airliner. And then not to admit immediately that they did it. That was dreadful, wasn't it? What do you think?
Well, it is. Okay, so yes, I would suggest what probably happened is you've got a whole sort of confusion going on within the Iranian military, where they don't want to admit what they've done. You know, it might be just as a similar sort of thing might well happen over here. I mean, we didn't know for several days what was behind that shoot down of the aircraft. And we had to speculate on Friday. It may have been all sorts of things. And what we did is we basically looked at all the options, including the fact that the Iranians had shot it down. So, you know, yes, but it's a screw up. But in a way, I think most people in the world will view it in the light which I do, which is, well, if the Americans had not escalated tensions to put the Iranian forces on this hair trigger in this way, this probably would never have happened. And the ultimate responsibility really, really lies with the person that set all of the militaries on edge in the first place, ready for a potential massive war. And the reason that didn't happen, let's make it clear, this is I got this from the Saker and various, well, it's actually, I did it live on Press TV on the Iranian channel, actually on I think it was Thursday or Wednesday evening, was that the Iranians had threatened, and this was put out through the Tehran Bureau of NBC, through the journalist from NBC in Tehran, the American network, that if the Americans struck back after the attack on the air bases, that the Iranians would destroy Dubai and Haifa in Israel. So Dubai in the UAE and Haifa in Israel would be the subject of a massive ballistic missile attack from Iran. And so that what they've done is they've done a fairly low-level attack on these American air bases, which is their primary objective, is to get the Americans out of the Middle East, and it should be the primary objective of peace campaigners right across the world. But the secondary thing that they're saying is, well, we recognize that there are powerful forces in Dubai and in Israel that are also aiding this whole process, and we're going to hit them if you strike back against us. So it was quite a quite wise move by the Iranians not to target human beings, not to target individuals. But of course, you know, the pulling down of the air, or the shooting down of the airliner, I think most people can understand, well, that's a mistake that happens, and perhaps the aviation authorities should have been thinking that and should not have been allowing civilian airliners to fly around at such a moment of high tension.
Maybe. Yeah, all right. I mean, I agree with you in terms of what you said about everything you said about the Soleimani assassination. Fascinated by the China angle. We'll definitely pursue that in the coming days. I want to ask you, Tony Gosling is our guest, by the way, thisweek.org.uk. If you haven't checked out Tony's programme, The Politics Show, do check it out. Bilderberg.org as well is a terrific site as well. Let me just... A million tweets came in there, Tony. I don't like ignoring them on this particular issue as well. Let's go down here. I wanted to ask you, we spoke after the publication of the Chilcot report, and in the immediate days after the publication of Chilcot, the media, you'll remember this well, vividly you'll remember this, the broadsheet media, particularly in this country, apologised for its conduct in the run-up to the Iraq war. It did. The Guardian, The Independent, I know there was something as well. I know there was something as well in The Times about not giving, you know, about regretting not holding Blair and his government to holding their feet to the fire in the way they should have done. They promised they wouldn't do it again. They're a lying show of bastards, aren't they, Tony?
They're all absolutely lying.
Exactly the same thing, right?
One of the most fascinating comparisons with the Soleimani assassination is looking at the comparison to the entrapment by the American ambassador to Iraq, April Glasby, back in 1989-1990, where she said to Saddam Hussein, well, it's okay, you can go into Kuwait. Officially, the US has no position on this. Obviously, the Kuwaitis are stealing your oil from under the ground. They had a load of drilling rigs along the border, you know, and this was seen as, and so April Glasby, the US ambassador, said to Saddam Hussein, it's okay, you can go in and attack, and in fact, you can take over Kuwait. We don't have a position on it. Go for it. And that, of course, was entrapment, because as soon as they did go for it, the Americans went absolutely nuts on the world stage, at the Security Council, the UN, and the first Gulf War started. So there was a similar thing actually going on last week with the Soleimani assassination, because it's become quite clear now through the Lebanese press, the Syrian press, the sort of press that we don't get in London or Washington, that that Soleimani was over in Baghdad on a peace mission, which was actually the initiative of the US, would you believe? So the US was suggesting that the Saudis should be talking to the Iranians, and that this could have potentially, although there may be the US arms companies didn't want this, but they could be negotiating an end to the war in Yemen, for example, potentially to the forces in Libya, and several Middle East conflicts could have been potentially diffused by this. Now, looking back on it now, seeing Soleimani assassinated, it does look as if the Americans had no intention of this actually taking place. It was simply a ruse to get Soleimani to Baghdad, to get him into a place where potentially he wasn't, he was going to be exposed. He thought he was going to be doing something good, and that we were going to be seeing a diffusion of tension in the Middle East. But that's quite clear. The evidence is quite clear about that. That's what they're saying over in that part of the world, is Soleimani was over here to broker a peace deal suggested by the Americans with the Saudis. And that is exactly the sort of thing that the American diplomats were doing to start the first Gulf War. So entrapment. I would suggest never believe ever any American diplomat again, because these people simply can be not interested in peace. I mean, I think you have to be just suspicious. If they're interested in peace, that means that they're interested in not selling weapons. That's all they seem to really care about, making money for the shareholders of the arms companies, Richie. And when it comes to peace, they're not interested.
No, they're not. It was, you know, speaking of one or two journalists doing their jobs, it was nice to see Mike Pompeo, the US Secretary of State, looking a bit uncomfortable when he was briefing from the White House last week. And one or two of the old hacks, tired old hacks, some of them, just had enough of his bullshit and said, hang on a second, you told us that Soleimani was involved in things, in plots that were about ready to go. Now you're rolling back on that and you're saying that, you know, that he was involved in stuff. You're not being very specific. And it was very good to see that.
Okay. I mean, what they were saying, what Pompeo and others actually said, not straight away, but in the days after the assassination, was that Soleimani was plotting to blow up the US embassy.
Yeah.
And of course, by the way, I don't know if you know, but after the week after Christmas, when there were the attacks on the embassy itself, it was under siege, although no one was killed or anything. The ambassador apparently left Baghdad. So, you know, what they're saying is, I think the main purpose of this is because this is the legal reason which is needed under the international law to do an assassination like this, is if you can prove that someone is about to do an imminent attack, even though this is legally a bit dodgy, someone has actually had to do an attack on your country. So what they're saying is, well, we believe he was about to do an attack on our embassy, which is pretty much part of our country in Iraq. So this is extremely flaky legal ground they're on, but they think that they can get away with it by patting each other on the back with the lawyers in Washington saying, oh, this is a legal reason why this assassination is legal. Of course, it wasn't. It was a war crime. And the actual evidence for their war crime doesn't stand up to any kind of test, because he clearly wasn't going to destroy the US embassy, what with having no ambassador there anyway. So this is all just made up by Pompeo, etc. No wonder he was looking a bit nervous.
Pack of lies. Hey, listen, we're about out of time, so I want to ask you a favour. The timeline that you posted on politicsthisweek.wordpress.com, thisweek.org.uk links there as well, the Martin Bormann Nazi gold timeline, it's some brilliant read, Tony. I have to congratulate you. It's absolutely brilliant. I've just posted...
Well, I'm still putting the bits of the jigsaw together.
You're still putting it together.
Still finding little bits, you know, week by week, finding other little bits of that jigsaw, yeah.
It's brilliant, mate. So what I suggest is, in a couple of weeks' time, at your pleasure, at your leisure, at your convenience, we'll do a second hour of the programme, because it's going to take a bit of time, this. Rather than you come on and do a news roundup with me, when it suits you, just after six, we'll go through this and we'll have a right good chat about it, because not only is it hugely fascinating, it's entertaining as well. It shouldn't be maybe entertaining, but it is. But it's also very educational and important.
Well, it is. And I think it explains a hell of a lot. And there's a couple of things if I've just got a minute, I can say, which I've come across over the last week.
Go on, you've got a minute.
First of all, the reasons why we haven't seen Israel pursuing Nazi war criminals, of course, right from the word go, when the Israeli state was founded in 1948, one of the reasons was because pro-Nazi Nelson Rockefeller agreed with David Ben-Gurion in 1948, just a few days before the vote at the UN to recognize Israel, that he would deliver the Latin American countries' votes pro the partition of Palestine for the new Israeli state, but only if David Ben-Gurion and the Israelis agreed and promised never to pursue Nazi war criminals in South America, or ones being controlled by the Dulles brothers and those in the US intelligence network. So that's one of the main reasons why we never saw the Israelis actually pursuing these Nazi war criminals. The other one is one of the things I discovered was that the shipment of uranium, enriched uranium from the Nazis and this submarine U-234, which was sent out right at the very end of the war. Now, that was sent to Japan because obviously at the end of the war, the Nazis wanted the Japanese to have this enriched uranium, potentially for a weapon. Anyway, it was just the day after Martin Bormann arrived in London. He was brought over there by British commandos and by Desmond Morton, Churchill's private secretary. After Bormann arrived in the UK, the two Japanese officers on board that submarine were shot, and the submarine changed course. And literally a day after that, the enriched uranium was handed over to the Americans, Richie, half a ton of it, actually, that went straight to the Manhattan Project. So it looks as if most of the enriched uranium used in the Trinity test and the two live bombs on Japan was actually produced by the Nazis and handed over in that way. So, and Bormann played a big part in making sure it went to the Americans and not the Japs.
Let's get into that real soon, mate. You pick the time and we'll do it, because our listeners are going to love it. It's hugely important. It's unknown history. It's what we call hidden history, and it's great work. I really enjoyed reading that. Thisweek.org.uk, the politics show live from Bristol weekly on BCFM. You can't miss it, folks. I meant it when I said it earlier on. It's the last bastion of real journalism left in the UK on local radio. I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. Tony, thanks
well,
for coming on.
The funny thing is, Richie, BBC used to do a programme which looked at all these things called Time Watch.
They did,
you know,
didn't they?
And that stopped around about 93, 94.
Was it 93?
They haven't done anything decent ever since. I mean, that's when it finished, yeah.
But
anyway, yeah, if you know, I'm happy to do a thing with you pretty much any evening over the next week or so. That's absolutely fine. A couple of weeks, Richie, no problem.
Fantastic. On that exclusively, Tony. Thanks, mate. Love having you on. You know that. Speak again real soon. And thanks for your help today. The brilliant Tony Gosling. Cheers, mate. The great Tony Gosling live on the Richie Allen radio show for Monday 13th, it is. That's the 13th of January 2020. Right, lots happening. Loads of comments on that. Dean Henderson will join the Richie Allen radio show in a few minutes' time. Before that, though, we're going to take headlines. Indeed, we are. Yes, yes, I am looking. I'm looking at my producer. I don't have a producer or an editor. It's just me. It's just me and Z. It's over to FSN for headlines. It's probably Ollie Barrett there. Is it you, Ollie? Headlines.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Authorities in the Philippines say a hazardous eruption could take place within hours at a volcano south of Manila. Iranian police have denied shooting at protesters with live ammunition in Tehran. Britain's Queen's been holding crisis talks with senior royals over the future roles of Prince Harry and his wife Meghan. And Rwanda has released four Ugandans from jail in a bid to ease long-running political tension between the two countries.
Yeah, thanks, Ollie. It is 2.5 minutes past the hour. Dean Henderson has just checked in. He's live. He will be live from Missouri, the Ozarks, in a few minutes. We're broadcasting live from Salford and Greater Manchester. Multiple platforms. We are Fab Radio 2, TriggerWarning.tv, my website, RichieAllen.co.uk, and lots more besides. Right then. And it's miserable out there. It's absolutely horrendous out there. It's horrendous out there. It is in Salford. We have the tail end of Storm Brendan. The tail end of Storm Brendan, which has brought parts of the west of Ireland to a standstill. No bloody power, Jean-Anne Crowley was telling me in Connemara there. So let's have a listen outside, see what the weather is like, see if Storm Brendan is still going on outside. Is it? No. Apparently it's all quiet there. Storm Brendan! Yeah, it's miserable out there. I'd stay inside if I were you. Yeah, that's Storm Brendan. Right! You big, baldy, gammon child. It is the BBG, not the BBC.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, thanks very much for all your tweets. You know that you can watch or read what other people are tweeting me by where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word. And if you press enter, you'll see what people are tweeting to me, and you can form online relationships and friendships and all that sort of thing. You see? No harm in that. Right, let's get Dean Henderson on the Richie Allen radio show. Taking us there, it's the king of rock and roll. Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll, guitar man on the Richie Allen radio show. 7.5 minutes past the hour. Like Tony Gosling in the first hour, my next guest, well, the integrity shines out of him. He's a brilliant writer. And I'm talking books as well as articles, of course. I mean it when I say integrity. He's a great political analyst, geopolitical commentator, and I've been using his website to help me present and produce my programme for years. I was until recently. We're talking Henderson left... God, all my bloody brain is gone. HendersonLefthook.wordpress.com, of course. HendersonLefthook.wordpress.com, where he's written articles, editorials, opinion pieces on the big issues of the day for years, along with his brilliant wife, Jill. Recently, WordPress took the site down. Why? Why did they? Let's find out. Let's welcome back, for the first time in 2020, to your Richie Allen radio show, a great friend of ours, somebody we admire a lot. It's our own Dean Henderson. Dean, welcome back to the programme.
Hey, Richie. Glad to be back.
I'm glad we've got a great connection, mate. Thanks for coming on. What's happened with the website? The website's been there for years. You've been updating it for years with your interviews on radio and television, your articles, Jill's work. Nobody could ever impugn it. Nothing untrue about what you write, nothing hateful about it, nothing harmful. What happened, my friend?
Well, you're probably asking the wrong person, really, but to get to the very bottom of it. But, you know, I just came home last Tuesday and got a letter, like an email from, it was from a bot. It was from WordPress, but it was signed Knox, K-N-O-X, and then it automatic in quotes, and then it's slash community guardian. So I guess the main thing is that people should feel a lot safer now in their communities, that they're being, you know, guarded by Knox, the bot, from their tender little ears reading the truth on my website. So, yeah, there's no reason for it. They don't have to give a reason. They stated that in the letter. And I saw this coming. You know, it's amazing. It's, you know, been up for 10 years because WordPress is just another piece of the Silicon Valley military industrial information spy complex. And it always has been. They took me down in 2014. Already I had to put it back once. That was the NSA, according to my friend Mike Harris, and who should know. But yeah, this time it's just WordPress. And yeah, it's just, well, I wrote an article the day before called Illuminati versus Iran, which is an excerpt of my Big Oil book. I'm sure that didn't please them. And then it was the next day that the Iranians responded to the attempted assassination of Soleimani, which I think Tony Gosling has it exactly right. He was there in Iraq to broker some deal over Yemen with the Saudis or something. So, you know, they just want to keep it stirred up. They have to keep the violence going. They have to keep the war going in the Middle East for the contractors, for Lockheed Martin, British Aerospace. But it's these same entities that own the internet. And that's what's increasingly going to happen is they threw it out there like a net. In internet, and they got us all in it, and now they're going to start weeding out the truth, and they're going to pretty much present this hive mind single point of view, which lines up with corporations. Everyone has a shopping mall in their pocket now with these phones. You just hit a button and buy anything. It's a capitalist dream, right? So, you know, those of us that criticize that and deconstruct it and tell people what it actually is are going to be targeted, and there's been many others. So I wear it as a badge of honor, and in a way, I've been kind of going dark on my end for a little while here. I just, you know, we relocated. I got family stuff that I want to deal with. I want to get away from the computers and the electronics as much as I can. And so in a weird kind of way, they played right into my hand by doing this. And they're way behind. They're 10 years behind. They should have done it 10 years ago. We got so much information out on them. We got the jump on them. They're just nipping at our heels, Richie, just like they always do. They're not very smart, okay? They're inbred. The royal family situation is really interesting. I think it's lining up just where it needs to be right now. First Prince Andrew, now Harry, must have read my book. I don't want to be with the lizards anymore. I got to get out of here. Go to Canada. I don't know, but it's just that's the way I see it. I'm not too worried about it, okay? And people just need to go to Amazon now and buy a book or something, because that's what I got. You know, everything on that blog, pretty much everything was in a book. That's the good thing. Everything's in print. It'll stay in print. It's not going anywhere. My book sales in the last 5 months have just skyrocketed since I wrote the last book. And so, yeah, I feel like it's just like a tactical, desperate act by the military industrial complex. And, I think they're a little bit late.
The reason you were targeted last week, and I know this, I've been around a while. You see, you're an incredibly modest guy. Your following is massive. And I know this because, not out of nosiness, but I know that your website is one of the go-to places for many people who've turned their backs on their national newspapers and their national television and radio channels. It's huge. You've got a huge following. And the reason you've got a huge following is, and I've said this before, I've talked about you behind your back, your ears must have been burning. One of the things that you've managed to do incredibly well is you've talked about things that sound outlandish to most people, and they used to sound outlandish to me. When I first started waking up to some of the things you talk about, I thought they were outlandish and were preposterous and ridiculous. But guys like you, through your books, were a huge help because you have been able to, in a very moderate, in a very reader-friendly way, understand that the things that you write about are going on, and you've built up a huge following. And that's not to be blown smoke up your ass, my friend. It's the truth. You've got a huge following. A lot of people brag about huge followings, but they don't have it. You've got a massive readership. And of course, you're writing about what's really going on with the assassination of Soleimani, who might have been behind it. And people know that you've got a huge following. And the timing of it is absolutely uncanny, just while all of this is kicking off in the Middle East. So I would, like you said, wear it as a badge of honour. And I would endorse what you said. You know, I've recommended your books to my listeners for years. If you go to amazon.co.uk, Dean's books from Big Oil, of course, he just mentioned that, the Federal Reserve Cartel, the Four Horsemen, these, which is Big Oil and their bankers, that's the Four Horsemen. This is huge. These are great reads, and they neatly knit together what's been going on for the last several centuries and where it's led up to now. So I'm not blowing smoke at you, mate. They've gone after you because you've got a massive readership. But, you know, they're not going to stop guys like you because you'll be on radio and television. You'll continue to write your books. And it's good to hear that your books have, there's been an upsurge in sales. Before we talk about Iran, let's talk about the royal family then. Because I've kind of underestimated the importance of this story. And Tony Gosling put me right in the first hour. This is a bigger story than I was giving it credit for. I was just laughing at it, Dean, and taking the piss out of it. But obviously it's a serious story, right? It's a big story.
I think it is because I think, you know, particularly with Meghan Markle, you know, I think she really saw up front the racism, the white supremacy, and the injustice. As she herself put it, she couldn't believe the injustice. You know, she said, I wasn't ready for this, but I really couldn't believe was just the lack of justice. So you're dealing with a fascist, inbred Nephilim family that rules like Iron Fist in their own family and also in the world. You know, I mean, it's so weird that they'd be like, oh, the Queen's going to call a meeting to decide Harry and Meghan's life. Oh, really? So you're just, I mean, again, they're just like taking this power away from this kid and his wife and usurping it and saying, we're going to tell you pretty much what to do, Junior. But I admire him for doing it. And, you know, who knows what the motives are. I hope it's I hope it is what I was referring to, which is just that the kid's embarrassed. You know, I mean, there's all these scandals surrounding these people for what, hundreds of years now, thousands of years, really. And their beginnings, I mean, were not auspicious. They were the initial savages. They taught Indians to scalp. You know, they taught tribes to go to war with each other and then made up archaeology lies about how Indians were always at war with each other. No, they weren't. You're the barbarians. You're the savages. You paid for those, everything. You paid for all this stuff coming out of here, whether it was the scalps of Indians hanging in your castles in Spain or the pelts of beavers, put the fur coats on your women, or, you know, you're just a vacuum cleaner of resources on this earth. And now you have the audacity to turn around and declare, you know, there's this global warming thing where you're attacking carbon, you're attacking water, you're attacking air, you're attacking us. Okay, so people have just kind of had it. And what I've been most impressed with, I think you're right, I think it is a bigger story than even the mainstream, of course, would like to believe. And I mean, I think people have had it. And I think people are kind of on Harry's side right now. And her side, and just being like, yeah, no shit, get away from these crazy people. And we still haven't, you know, heard much of Andrew. So that's a whole nother thing.
We'll come back to Andrew in a second. Dean Henderson is our guest. His website was hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. A wonderful resource it was, until WordPress recently deleted it and wouldn't give him any reason. And I think governments need to come together and say that to protect free speech, that companies like WordPress cannot do that without giving a genuine reason that can be disputed. There should be a tribunal, right? It's outrageous that they can get away with doing that to somebody like you. I'm genuinely sickened by that. Now, it's interesting that in the first hour, Tony Gosling took the point of view that Megan is a climber, a mover, a shaker, a kind of a diva-esque type of woman who just wanted fame and fortune and kind of got her hooks into Harry. But you see it differently. You think she's just an ordinary woman, however, you know, however diva she might be. Elton John's a diva, who cares? But you think that she might have gotten a glimpse of what these people really are, and she's running for the hills.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think Tony's wrong. I think she's definitely a diva and a climber and all those things you kind of would have to be to marry the royal family. But I think, even for a person like that, to be able to shock a person like that, you know, I mean, it's kind of a person that, you know, you wouldn't even think would care what was at the top of the ladder. As long as she gets to the top, you get to the top of that ladder and you start seeing these people shape-shifting into lizards and just ugly, just the whole thing. I mean, you know, it's just like Andrew. It's not a, you know, people talk about these guys, Jimmy Savile, and they talk about Epstein and like somehow they were allowed into the royal pedophile. No, the royals are the pedophile ring. And these guys are just agents that were procuring kids for them, for God's sakes. And who knows what else? Rumors that they drink blood, you know, could be Vlad the Impaler. Prince Charles has a castle now in Romania, pretty, you know, right there. I mean, he's got it. So I don't know, you know, really nothing's beyond the pale. And I just think it's interesting. Yeah, it's not like, I don't think she's a very likable person, Megan. I mean, yeah, she is a climber and she is a diva and she, you know, obviously all that's true. But yeah, I just think it's interesting to see how even a person like that would be just shocked at the injustice, is the word she used, of this royal family.
Yeah, it might have been the word she chose. She might have meant something else. And what about this idea that he might know? I mean, you and I have been talking on radio for a number of years. I've heard you do great interviews with presenters in America, and you've talked about Diana. And we've read the books by the great Noel Botham, who died, the great Telegraph war correspondent, who wrote this amazing book about the murder of Princess Diana. You know, we saw Keith Allen's documentary about Diana, which makes a compelling case that Harry's grandfather, you know, had some involvement, maybe even gave the order for the murder of this young woman. Imagine him knowing that, Dean. Do you think that's a genuine possibility, that this lad has grown up as a teenager, he joined the army, he did see some action in the illegal, of course, horrible satanic wars in the Middle East, but that's, you know, I'm not going to blame him for that. Do you think he might know that his family were complicit in the murder of his mother?
Well, it's all over the internet. All over the papers and in a bunch of books. And so, yeah, why not? I mean, so you have to wonder. It's also interesting that, you know, it was Harry, not William, because William is in line for the throne. And he's also, as I understand it, the son of King Juan Carlos of Spain. He's not actually Charles's kid. And he's the one that, you know, maybe they're setting up to be the world king or whatever in Jerusalem that people talk about, because, you know, he's there. You got with King Juan Carlos, you got Bourbon blood, you got Habsburg blood, you got Merovingian blood with Diana, you got Merovingian blood, you got Bruce blood, you got Sinclair or St. Clair blood and all this stuff. So, and Stuart blood. So, you know, it's funny how he's sort of fallen in line and he's sort of still, you know, hasn't said much or defended his brother or woken up to the horrors of his family or anything. Whereas Harry has, and you know, who knows, that may be part of it too. He may know some stuff about that, you know, about who William's real daddy is. Who knows who his real daddy is? I mean, they're always doing these, you know, that's what they do. They're breeding projects. I mean, with the royals, it's not romance. It's just bloodlines. It's all about DNA, bloodlines, you know, getting the right combinations to get the most pure Nephilim blood. So, yeah, I think it's very possible that Harry's tuned into that stuff. He's always seemed a little bit hipper than William in terms of a little bit, you know, more on the stick and a little bit less robotic. And, you know, kid grew a beard. Hey, you know, whatever. I mean, just stuff like that. I mean, with these fascists, that's like the revolutionary act, you know.
Let me ask you this, Dean. Dean Henderson is our guest, because I meant what I said when we came in about your brilliant geopolitical analysis that, you know, we've had the benefit of for many, many years. Now, when listeners hear things, now, David Icke, whom I've read extensively and who I have a lot of time for as well, David would be in agreement with Dean's characterization of this family and this family historically, the reptilian connection, the reptilian mind, and the blood drinking and stuff. And a lot of listeners, maybe not a lot, but some listeners will listen and they will think, and I should do this more often because you always have the answers, or you have good answers anyway. Because at one time I would have listened to this and I would have thought, this is outrageous. Where's Dean going with this Nephilim connection even? And why does he believe that blood sacrifice is important to these people? Where's the evidence of that? And I've had a couple of tweets from listeners who are new to this, and they've just said, this is ridiculous. However evil these people might be, and however much evidence there might be linking them to child abuse, and I think there's a lot of evidence linking them to child abuse, why does Dean bring in things like blood sacrifice and drinking blood? Where's the evidence? Over to you, my friend. I'm getting these tweets. What do you say to that?
Well, I didn't always believe it either. I suppose I thought it was crazy when I first heard it too, but you know, it's just this pattern that goes on, and then you find out, you know, for real, that there's these Silicon Valley companies that are basically harvesting organs from young kids. And, you know, rumors that David Rockefeller got some of those before he died at age, whatever, I don't know, it's 97 or something. And this is just what the elite do. I mean, there's organ trafficking out of Syria. That's a lot of what that war is about. Check out DynCorp, you know, which is a another CIA scumbag front, but there's all kinds of stuff going on. Ukraine is the epicenter of it right now. And that's why the Democrats in the United States are, you know, delusional and go to bat for Ukraine, you know, on this last thing. Because, but yeah, there is a lot of evidence so that this goes on. And you listen to Ronald Bernard, who defected from the Illuminati, you know, you just listen to, yeah, you read David Icke and you listen to, Kathy O'Brien and just a lot of people. And there's you know, hundreds of books written on it, thousands of articles. And it just kind of makes a little bit of sense, because I think their blood, Rh negative blood that the royals have, which they all have, which is very rare, it's 15% of the population have it. And it's concentrated in the Basque region, northern Spain, southern France, where the Normans first, you know, got together. And a lot of these families interbred and, you know, dispersed from Normandy to different areas of the world to become the kings and queens, that self-appointed kings and queens that we have now. So it's 15%. So it is a different kind of blood. So it's possible that they need some human blood to stabilize those genetics. So that maybe they don't turn into what looks more like a, you know, reptile. I don't know, but you kind of think it through. And yeah, to us, I know it's just like, whoa, that's, what are you talking about? But you know, these just people, they're not like us, okay? I mean, if you have any delusions about that, you should ask yourself why, you know, we just go taking out a military general who is going to try to talk peace. You know, I mean, you just have to go to those simple things on the news and you know, ask yourself, well, what is wrong with these people? I mean, they like war. They like blood. They like all that dark stuff, and they actually feed on it. That's their food that keeps them going. So they're not like us. And yeah, there's, you know, obviously we could spend hours deconstructing this whole thing, but that's what I believe anyway. I mean, it does sound crazy, but I fully believe it's true. And I just don't, you know, I do believe these people are different. They're not totally human. Okay. The crown, kings and queens of the world are not totally human. That's why they're kings and queens, self-appointed. And that's why they live on welfare. They don't do shit. they get benefits and they get free stuff and the free castles to live in. And the latest, you know, they have the little turrets on the castles, and the latest little turret is their cell towers and crown castle. And that's what they're going to use for their final solution, which is a mind control project with this fourth industrial revolution, which I also believe is the Fourth Reich, the coming out party for the fascist white supremacists. Just Nazis, pure Nazis. Before there was Hitler. These are the original Nazis, you know, these families, these DNA obsessed, bloodline obsessed, eugenics obsessed families are the initial Nazis.
Just to, okay, just to clarify that for people who are brand new to this, because I've sometimes said on the program when I've been doing my silly monologues, I've often said that to most people, including myself for many years, these horrible wars of aggression and mass murders, genocides committed overseas, I spent most of my adult life believing that these were ultimately about resources, you know, that the unspeakable crimes were being committed for land, for oil, for gas, for supremacy, for hegemony, for ideologies to supplant their, you know, their beliefs and to develop hegemonies. But it wasn't because I spent time around David, and it wasn't because I read your books, which I did, and it wasn't just because I spent time with Jordan Maxwell and the late, great Jim Mars. I also began to think to myself that these were certainly benefits for those who prosecuted these wars, but that there was also something else going on. I felt this in my bones for years, but I was scared to talk about it, that there was something else otherworldly going on, some kind of a control thing going on. And I was reluctant to consider the notion that there was something non-human about it, something interdimensional. And these days I don't dismiss it out of hand. I don't know what the bloody hell is going on, but I'm prepared to listen to you and to David and others because you make a very compelling case for it. It's a wonderful thing, actually. It's kind of hidden in plain sight. We're meant to think that Trump and all these people are just doing it for resources and land, but that's a wonderful cover story, when in fact it's about something far darker than, you know, it's something more spiritual than most of us want to think about. You didn't come to that conclusion easily either, did you, Dean? That wasn't easy for you.
Yeah, right, because, you know, I definitely come out of a background of political economy, a kind of the Marxist political economy crowd, economically speaking, and and it is about resources. I mean, it definitely, you know, it's not that's wrong. It's about all those things you said. But yeah, then there's another level, and that has to do with the resource of energy, you know, which all the universe is energy, and they know that, and most of us don't realize that. We're still stuck in the Royal Society lies of, you know, particle physics and evolution and might is right and all this crazy stuff, protons and atoms and, you know, just this insanity. But it's all about energy, and it's all about good energy and bad energy. Good energy is that which resonates with nature, the Schumann resonance, everything natural law included, which is why natural law trumps British maritime law in a courtroom in the U.S. if you know how to argue it. And which is why everybody swears on a Bible to take office, because they know British maritime law is a commercial code. It's not an actual justice thing. And then the other side, you have unnatural stuff, which is, yeah, wanton killing when you don't eat.
Right, Dean has just momentarily dropped out there. It's 28 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. I'm hoping he'll come back. There is a connection issue at the moment. This is mind-blowing stuff, this. If you go to amazon.co.uk and look for Dean Henderson, you'll find links to where you can get his books. They're affordable. And he goes into what he's talking about with me here in great detail there. Dean, we just lost you just for a second. I hope you're back now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, didn't you hear me?
Thank God. No, we only lost about 30 seconds. You were talking about how how maritime law, you were talking about maritime law.
Yeah.
So if you want to pick up on that point again.
Okay. Yeah, that was probably the best 30 seconds. So this is why I was cut out, but I'll try to do it again. Just that natural law, you know, anything that's natural, is good. And this is the going back to good or bad energy. What is it? Well, good energy is anything that's natural. Bad energy is anything that's not. It goes against nature, goes against the human residence. That's British maritime law. Whereas common law would be the natural law, which is why it does trump maritime law in a courtroom in the U.S. if you know how to argue it, if you know, your common law. So even the powers that be acknowledge natural law, acknowledge these things, and AI and Nephilim and aliens and pedophilia and wanton killing through war. These are all unnatural things. So there's a deliberate attempt to bring unnatural things into this world by this cabal and its operatives in the Masons, the Kabbalists, the Muslim Brotherhood, or the Royal Society.
Dean, can I ask you a question? Would we include in those unnatural things the confusion, confusing children about sex and about gender? Sure. Because that's massive at the moment.
Exactly. All that stuff. Transgenderism, all that stuff. Beyond beef. On and on. I mean, we're into it now. This is 2020. We're getting close to 2021, which is, my opinion, what Agenda 21 means. And yeah, you're going to see more and more unnatural things, more and more, people talking about cannibalism, as a global warming, fix. Things like this, just these Luciferian, upside down, inverted, unnatural things. And they're, like I say, there's a coming out party. They're taking over. They have the political system now, the economic system sewed up all sides. And so you're going to see more and more just crazy talk, really, is what it is. And that's the thing. People just have to really be ready to acknowledge that and to use their critical thinking capacities that they have left, use their pineal gland to discern what's right and wrong, because there's going to be a lot of unnatural, and that's all bad.
Why is the pineal gland?
This is what these things.
Sorry, Dean. Why is sorry to interrupt you, mate. Why is the pineal gland, why is that so important?
Well, yeah, that's like the third eye, and that's what has been really, it's taken a drug.
Right, we've just
drubbing from Florida. Now it's dead.
We just
the blue light.
Sorry, Dean, we just lost you again. We just lost you again momentarily. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, because it works.
Sure,
it works all the time. I'm just going to disconnect and reconnect. It works all the time. Okay. It's been a brilliant line so far. It's been brilliant. Dean Henderson is our guest live from the Ozarks, Missouri. His books, as I said, can be found. His website, which was. Oh, Jesus. I've been reading it and using it as a resource for years. HendersonLeftHook.wordpress.com. WordPress decided to delete the website. Wouldn't give him any reason for it. He's got an enormous following and an enormous readership. And there's no coincidence, really, for me in the timing. In terms of when WordPress deleted that site, the timing was uncanny with all that's been happening in Iran. Dean has just been talking about the unnatural. Being presented as perfectly acceptable to people and what that all means going forward. Thanks for your patience, Dean. The line is so much better than it was last time, mate. I hope we're back. I've just had a question. We're 24 minutes to the top of the hour. We're going to go to the top of the hour with your permission, of course. But on what you're talking about, are we going to get an alien invasion staged? Or at least the start of disclosure in terms of the unnatural and the supernatural being presented to people? Do you think a staged alien invasion is on the agenda in the next couple of years?
Yeah, probably. There's all this disclosure going on right now, and anything that says disclosure, I instantly think, okay, you're CIA or you're MI6 or you're Mossad or you're a bad guy. Because why would anyone have to disclose anything to me? I have these inalienable rights as a human being where I kind of know everything already, and so do you. And so we don't need these disclosures out there. So that whole thing is a sham, and it always has been. There's probably a few people in there who don't know that and are doing their best and they're that aren't part of that. But yeah, we're working on this thing where we're supposed to really like the aliens. If you haven't noticed, it's pretty hard not to.
Yeah,
and they actually use the word gods synonymously with aliens now. That's just everywhere. Like if you watch the History Channel or any of that garbage. It's all garbage, by the way. Most of what's going on TV right now with regards to agent aliens, where it's garbage. Okay. It's just misinformation. And so, yeah, they're going to try to make the gods equivalent to aliens. And then my guess is they're going to probably, you know, do a second coming of Jesus. Why not? And use the Blue Beam, Project Blue Beam, and the tools at hand, and make people think Jesus is coming back. And then behind that, they'll be putting evil people in power as his protege, which is why the Prince William things make sense, because, you know, the Merovingian family claimed to be descendants of Jesus. That's the whole Dan Brown shtick, you know, which is all lies. He was promoted by the Illuminati. He's a bad guy, or, you know, anyway, he's a propagandist for the bad guys. And so then they'll say, oh, look, William, he's a Merovingian. So, oh, he's the second coming of Christ, maybe, because he's a bloodline relative of Jesus. Look, and look how great he is. And so it's going to be something like that, where they're going to try to, yeah, do the whole global one world government, single currency, which will be electronic, which is what Bitcoin is all about, and all these digital currencies, which is what Mark Carney was talking about recently in Jackson Hole about U.S. dollar is disruptive. We have to go to a global digital currency, is what he said. So that's an IMF special drawing, right?
You called that out, by the way. You called that out years ago. When people were raging about Bitcoin, saying it was wonderful, we can extricate ourselves from the financial system and we can run our own money. Years ago, you called BS on that. You said, listen, anything like that, that, you know, digitizes money completely and does away with hard currency and hard cash, is exactly what the cabal wants. You said it years ago, my friend.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, you know, and, well, it's just, again, it's just having that bullshit detector, that pineal gland, which has, when we got interrupted, I was talking about how it's been attacked. You know, yeah. It's the third eye. It's your ability to see beyond the senses that we normally think. It's just that instinct. It's just like, if you have that intact, then every person you meet, you will instantly know what, you know, whether or not that person has good intentions.
Good guy, bad guy. You just know instinctively. So damn, yeah.
You just, yeah, instinctive. It's your instinct. It's an easy way to put it. But most people just are so gullible, I find, in the West especially. We're very gullible because we've been living in this media propaganda witchcraft matrix where they tell us what is what, and then they reassure us that they're in charge and not to worry and nothing to see here. And people just get really gullible and easy to manipulate. And that's where we're at right now, unfortunately, because the pineal glands are washed out. The bullshit meters are non-existent. And people will swallow anything. And so, yeah, a lot of them, including people I respect, like Max Kaiser, swallowed the Bitcoin, you know, thing. And unbelievable. But, you know, it's just like these people that swallowed Trump, you know, QAnon, thinking that was real. Or the people that thought Obama was going to be the savior from the Democrat side. Or, you know, it's just on and on it goes, where people just sort of, yeah, it's an empire. It's late stage capitalism, financialized. It's about to crash. There's nothing left to really do with it. Once we get to the end of this electronic phase where, you know, everything's hooked together, 5G, I'm not sure where they have to take it then after that, the oligarchs. So where can they take the economy next? So we're now, our minds are now the product. And it's easy to do that when you have a gullible population. It's so much easier to make that hive mind.
And 5G, Dean, you talk about the hive mind. 5G is, we're going to see sickness escalate at the rate of knots in local communities, aren't we? Once 5G is everywhere, we're going to see a lot of people get sick very quickly.
You're already seeing it, and they're not telling people what it is. They make up new things. They, you know, this is how it'll go for a while. This is how it's been with vaccinations for what, a couple decades. Make up stuff, autism, make up Alzheimer's, make up all these things that these things cause. So they're not going to admit, obviously, that any of this is caused by 5G, but it's already happening. People are getting sick already. There's a lot of money in this. I mean, I went from, you know, living in the woods and, you know, not really having like a straightforward TV setup, not really being around people. And now I'm kind of out in the world and I'm watching the business channel, CNBC, and I'm going, wow. Yeah, this is what it really is. I mean, it's just so, there's huge money here. There's trillions of dollars at stake with this 5G, because it just connects everything. And it's what's pushing Wall Street to the moon. Clearly, it's 5G, nothing else. And if it fails, and it could very well fail, by the way, they're having a lot of problems with it. It's not going on schedule. I've heard them say now, oh, we're going to have to push it back and this and that. And, you know, can they even pull it off? So there's that. But yeah, people are already getting sick. They're already everything, you know, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, I got rid of my Gmail. I got a track phone without my name. I got Proton on this computer. They can't tell where I'm at. It says I'm in Dallas right now. I did all these things. I don't have bills anymore with my name on them because I'm staying at a place where it's you know, all included, whatever. Pay cash. And then they crash. When they start doing that stuff, they start like social crediting us. You know, like all of a sudden you have to have a two-step recovery to get into your Amazon book account. All of a sudden, the bank needs something extra to get something done by phone. All of a sudden, when I sold my house, the VA loan was denied, even though it was met appraisal right on it. Went through the whole process and then was denied, you know, and so the guy had to come up with something else. But I feel like I'm already being like really social credited. And now, of course, with the WordPress thing, and that's what all that is. So,
hey, hang on a second. This is huge. This is hugely interesting. So, it's all interesting, my friend, but this particular point, I've not considered this. So lately, in the last few months, it's becoming more and more difficult to do things online. And the banking, I mean. Your bank, and it's the same with my bank. No, I don't have a lot of money. First of all, let's get that out on the table. We don't have a lot of money. But our bank, we've got to do it online. There are no branches anymore. We can't go into a branch anymore and get cash over the counter. We can't meet with our bank manager. It doesn't happen. It's gone. It's all moved online. Now, of late, it's begun to get more and more difficult to make transactions. And this is all in the name of, apparently, the security of the account. It's supposed to be for my own good. When, in some cases, it's a real pain in the arse. It's a real nuisance. And you think you think it's not for our own good. They're going to make it more and more difficult to get to our money when we want to get to it, you believe?
If you're Richie Allen or Dean Henderson, yes.
Right.
I mean, not everybody. It won't be everybody. If you're a good little boy or girl and you don't make blueberry jelly, you buy it. You know, you don't cut firewood, you give up the coal company a bunch of money every winter for your power. I mean, you know, whatever it is, they know everything. They know everything about us. They know what we spend on. They know where we keep our refrigerator set. I mean, they know everything. So if you're just going along with the system, good little shopper, good little robot, no pineal gland, easy to push around, push in any direction they want, you won't have any problem getting your money out of the bank, I don't think. But if you're Richie Allen or you're Dean Henderson, I think you're going to have a lot more problems. What I've figured out is to go back to old school. There was a book one time, you might have read it way back. It was Jerry Mander, kind of a funny name, Jerry Mander. But Jerry Mander, with a J and an M. And he wrote a book called, he wrote two really good books. One of them was called 7 Arguments Against Television, which was really excellent. And then he wrote one called The Failure of Technology and the Rise of the Indian Nation. And that's where I think we're at, because I think what you don't see over the horizon of electronic, you know, this prison we put ourselves in, including with banks and everything, is what you don't see is once you step out of that, which I've been doing, and this is why I say almost WordPress did me a favor. I'm going even darker now. Don't even have to click on that every day and check it or whatever. You know, why? Forget it. Go live in the real world. Go hike 7.5 miles, which you did yesterday, and trails in this town, and go out and be among the people and find out what the pulse of the people. I know what the problem is. I've told everybody what I think the problem is. Now it's time to, you know, it's tactically, we have to shift gears maybe. We have to move on from information dissemination to action, to shut it down, shut this thing down. So but you step back out of the electronic matrix and then your life starts getting a lot easier. And that's the rise of the Indian nation part, you know, to where it's still possible to sort of do it a different way. Now to extricate yourself will take a while. Took me a while. Still doing it to some extent, but it's a lot better. And then things start getting easier, but yeah, there's definitely, something going on with the algorithms that are punishing people who are aware, punishing people who are telling the truth. And it's definitely, I think it's part of the social credit system that, is being marched out in China, but coming to the West, it's here already.
It is here already. Yeah. My, friend Hayden Hewitt, who's behind one of the men behind liveleak.com. He's very much interested in social credit system here, and he like yourself, reckons that it'll be the corporations that will roll this out, not governments. It'll be corporations. Yeah. Like, you might go to try and buy a ticket. The Grateful Dead might be in town, Dean. The Grateful Dead might be in town. Or CCR might be in town. You're an old rocker like me, Henderson. I know that. So CCR is in town. And you want a ticket. But something you've said on Twitter or on Facebook might preclude you from buying a ticket. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Every little thing, if it's online. And that's why, like, I don't have a credit card anymore. I'm not going to buy stuff online anymore. Because if you don't do it online, they can't really do that to you. But, and again, and that's the key. It's corporations, not government. So you can't say, oh, it's a First Amendment thing because, you know, yeah, I guess WordPress isn't the government. So WordPress can suspend my First Amendment government rights because it's not the government. I mean, they can do whatever they want. They have terms of use, terms of condition, whatever they, you know, the little thing that you click that you don't even read, just like Facebook, just like Twitter. And that's the way they've set it up. So it's fascism. I mean, it's when you can regulate speech in the private sector, you know, that's pretty much fascism. And that's what they're going to do with everything. They're going to be able to regulate commerce of all kinds, speech, who owns a gun. Yeah, who gets a concert ticket, but it's all going to be regulated from the private sector so that we really have no recourse with the Bill of Rights. And if that's not a medieval system, I don't know what is, but it's electronic medieval feudalism. So it's kind of dressed up in this high tech stuff so people don't see it come and see.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they've convinced a whole generation of young men and women. God love them, because they're not stupid. Yeah. They're as intelligent as we are, but they're so young and so innocent, they've convinced them that this is brilliant. It's brilliant that you can go into a pub and or into a concert and hold your phone to a little piece of plastic and pay for everything, and it's brilliant, it's convenient. They've convinced them. And it was nice about a year and a half ago, I was in a local shop, a local corner shop, and I saw a young lad paying with his phone. And I stopped him and I had a chat with him, and he was interested. College student. And he said, I didn't think about that. And I said, no, and it doesn't make you thick or stupid because you didn't think about it. But I said, you know, if we end up in a place where there isn't any money, where I can't come around to your house and buy your Transformer comic collection and or your Spider-Man collection and give you $20 for it, you know, and that's just between me and you and it's nobody else's bloody business. I said, if it gets to that stage, we're in trouble. And the kid agreed with me. And he said, you've given me a moment of pause there. I said, exactly, think about it. You know, but that was just one kid. They're embracing it. My friend in Waterford in Ireland was telling me the other day about a virtual reality headset that is so good now. It's so amazing that it put him inside the stadium of his favourite soccer team. And he was just blown away by this. He couldn't believe it. He said, I've never seen anything like this. He said, this really is the future, you know. And I thought, yeah, it is. But I also thought of what David Icke taught me a couple of years ago. When you use these things, it takes you just yet one more step away from reality. And easy to be molded and shaped by the establishment into whatever they want to shape you, Dean.
That's right. Yeah, they're taking you away from that natural world, that natural law, and you are more moldable. And of course, there's no coincidence, you know, little kids being given these cell phones when they're 3 years old and stuff like this. And like I said, just conditioning them, getting them used to it. It's an ankle bracelet. Think of your cell phone as an ankle bracelet, because that's pretty much what it is. And I did have to get one leaving the house just for emergencies, but it's like a track phone and I turn it off most of the time and I leave it here. I never take it with me if I go somewhere ever. And you'll just have to leave a message. I mean, but it doesn't have the apps. It doesn't have the internet. It has it. We turn it off. We don't use it. But it's a real problem. Yeah. For that generation, they see it. It's being sold to them as some sort of, you know, liberation, when in fact it's incarceration of the mind, the soul and the wallet. And they're never going to save any money because it's just too easy to buy stuff.
It's a prison.
That's just a simple thing of it. That's just why kids are broke. It's so easy to buy stuff.
It's a prison, Dean. I remember about 2 years ago, all we do really is go to live concerts because we love them. And of course, you're getting an energetic. You're getting, and I know you love concerts, Dean. You're getting a, you're getting a kind of an energy boost. You're getting a kind of an energy recharge when you're out and about with people. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine, Jean Ann, I mention Jean Ann all the time, we went to see Paul Simon in Manchester. And I would never have a phone with me at a concert. But I took a quick picture of Jean Ann with Paul Simon in the background so I could give to Jean Ann. And at that particular concert, we're standing there and we're dancing away to America and Mrs. Robinson and everything. I look around and there's 22,000 people inside Manchester Arena. And most of these fucking retards are trying to watch the Paul Simon concert through the screen of their smartphone. Jesus Christ, Dean. I'm like, he's right there in front of you. What the fuck? I'm sorry for swearing. And I thought, they're fucked. These people are gone. They're gone. They don't realise that Paul, that is Paul Simon right there. And they're recording it and watching it as they're recording it. I'm thinking, you've
everything
not...
it's like everything has to be captured by your little camera. Like, you can't just live life and enjoy a walk in the woods or enjoy a concert without just, like, capturing it in your little camera. And for what? And you're just, you're not even enjoying, you're not even seeing the woods. You're not seeing the concert. You're not seeing life. You're just going around capturing images. Sounds like some kind of like alien thing to me. You know, like the golden calf and the images and worship of images. Yeah. And even talks about this in the Bible. It's like the worship of images. Everything has to be an image, you know, and then it goes to your image on Facebook and your image on Twitter and your image and it's just all phony posturing. And it's really phony. Okay. The whole thing's phony because it is phony. It's not real. And that's what galls me, is just how it's kind of transforming people, you know, into these not very straightforward creatures anymore that all talk the same. They use the same intonation, the same words, the same acronyms and cute little sayings. And just like, shut up, man. Shut up and fucking be real. You know, be authentic. Be yourself. Tell me who you really are instead of just being a fucking bot or being a fucking lemming, you know?
Yeah, Jesus Christ. And you look at, you know, the plans. Musk is planning the implants. It won't be long before an implant will be available to help you go online. You talked about the hive mind earlier on. And I've got to ask you this. It's obviously a loaded question because I know I have a fair idea what your answer will be. But when they get us connected to the cloud or to the hive electronically, when they get us exactly where they want us, it'll be very easy then to end us, won't it? To just press a button. And if they don't like somebody, press the button and kill them. I know that might sound a bit much. It might sound a bit, you know, strong. But surely it will be. If you've got people connected up to microchips and stuff like that, you can just program something to, well, give them a little stroke, maybe. Give them a little heart attack, maybe.
Definitely. It's all possible. And it's like the movie Cell, you know. And, I mean, it's all possible. And the worst of it is, like, even if they don't just kill us all, which I think they like to kill 98% of us for sure. That's part of the Royal Nephilim agenda of overpopulation that they keep pushing. But the worst part of it all is just to live in this homogenous culture, global culture, where everyone, again, thinks the same, says the same, sees things the same. It's just useless. It's like, what good is that? You know, but honestly though, you know, I tell you get out in the world and, you know, which I've been doing just more outside, just hiking and go to the pubs and just talk to people and whatever. There's a lot of people, that are, I think, sort of the silent majority that really do kind of reject this shit. And that's what, when you're always online or you always, you know, doing what we had to do, you miss that because you're online, you're not in the real world. I mean, right now we're not in the real world, you know, we're trying to get the word out. We're trying to fix it, but still it's on their internet. So,
hey, by the way, you made a very important point there. I think the silent majority are very well aware that something is terribly wrong. But again, we go back to, there are consequences for speaking about it. These days, people are being cancelled. They're losing their jobs because they misgendered somebody, or because they might have said something about Zionism or whatever the bloody hell. The consequences in the real world are real and are tangible. So people are like, well, I tell you what, that Dean Henderson might be onto something, but I'm not fucking talking about it. not in my place of work, because I'm gone, Dean. I'm gone.
Exactly. It's that fear. It's just an overwhelming fear. And I've never seen anything like it in terms of self-censorship. You know, I have. I mean, there's people I've known for years, even decades. You've probably seen it too, that all of a sudden they're just kind of different and they just don't say what they mean. And they just kind of lockstep with, you know, whether it's one side of the political spectrum or the other. But yeah, that's the most frightening part. And that's the shaping of the consensus and the high mind, the soma, if you will. You know, it's the soma. Take your soma and go to sleep. Nothing to see here. And just blend in, you know, and that's really the overwhelming message. And then the corporations are now the progressives, right? I mean, they've sort of usurped progressivism. So like, everything they do has one black woman and one misgendered person and three, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's like they're uber politically correct. They're sort of taking over the progressive space and they're hiding behind it, just like ExxonMobil hides behind, you know, they call it greenwashing. Well, you could call this redwashing, I guess. You know, where you're hiding behind this progressive, what looks progressive, and you're basically implementing fascism.
Exactly. You know, far exactly. Away. How could it be progressive to say we've got a role, we've got a staff position that needs filling, and we're only going to allow candidates from a Latin background to apply? I mean, how the fuck could that be progressive? Yeah. That's as regressive as it gets. You know, these are the same people who promoted meritocracy as an idea. Now, look, meritocracy was never a real thing either. It was always about how much money you bloody had, never about whether you could do the job or not. But now they've kind of, you know, gazumped that, and now it's about, this Labour Party in the UK bullshit. You know, it's time we elected a woman. Well, first of all, you're a pathetic party. You're not socialist. You're not on the left, for a start. But what if fucking, excuse me language, what if Jesus arrived? What if the Messiah arrived and said, I want to stand for the leader of the Labour Party? Does it mean that he's out of the reckoning because you've got to have a woman this time? It's crazy shit, Dean, isn't it?
I mean, this is
crazy.
He's out. Well, exactly. And that's the way it's been here forever. And that's why even last time, I'm sure a lot of the reason that people couldn't look at the cheating that went on from the Clinton campaign against Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
They just couldn't look at it because, by gosh, she's a woman and somehow she's entitled. Wait a minute. I thought we didn't have entitlements anymore. I thought we were against entitlements. I thought, you know, people had to be, yeah, meritocracy, like you said, and you had to tell us what you stood for and you had to have good policy. No. She's just a woman and she's old too. So we feel sorry for her because she's an old woman. Yes, and Bill sucks some gal's dick, and we feel sorry for her. And the guy said he was going to grab our pussy, you know. And so, which is all just superficial bullshit.
Yeah.
It should have nothing to do with your vote, okay? But that's where people are at, and they're jerked around like little children on an emotional roller coaster. They don't have a grounding in natural law or natural right and wrong. Everything's an image. Everything is, oh, that man had a bad image. I hate him forever. Oh, you know, it's like, what are you, fucking four?
yeah, and we're surrounded, and you know, you've divested yourself of material things and the nonsense of that life, and it's a great position for you to be in. I'm kind of lucky insofar as, for the moment, the Richie Allen radio show, I can stream it using a company in California, and I don't have any bosses, so if there's something I'd like to say or if there's somebody I'd like to interview, I can do that. I don't have to worry about people, you know, online calling me names, claiming I'm, you know, I get called right wing, which is hilarious. I'm the furthest thing from right wing. But anyway, I don't have to worry about any of that for the moment, but that's coming down the line as well. Mate, I'm glad that you're back in terms of you've got a strong connection there. I'm, whatever I might be, and I talk a lot of hot air me sometimes, I'm very real. When I say that it kills me that hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com is gone, I mean it from the bottom of my heart, because I've plagiarized you so many times over the years, my friend. You know, I've taken information that you've put in the public domain. I haven't claimed it as my own, but I've talked about it. Sometimes I forget to list my sources, but most times I don't. I've given plenty of mentions over the years. I hope that you'll get back online somehow if you feel like it in the future. But before that, I'm going to ask my listeners, if you've not bought a Dean Henderson book, please buy a Dean Henderson book. Go to amazon.co.uk. When I tell you his books are brilliant, they are brilliant. You can take that to the bank. You got to support guys like him because they're very rare. Like Tony Gosling in The First Air, these guys are like hen's teeth. Do you hear me? You got to support them. You got to help them out. Otherwise, they don't write books. And link, you know, connect these dots as they do. I'll give you the final word today. Thank God we got you back on today. And we'll be doing this again in the very, very near future. Dean, no doubt about it. Final word to you, mate. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, right on, brother. I really appreciate that. We ain't going away. We're just shifting tactics here. There's some calling me somewhere, and we'll always be here, rabble rousing and raising hell. And I think the main thing right now, man, is just we're entering a really crazy time. You know, we got these we got World War III on the horizon with Iran. We got fires in Australia. Max Egan's been talking about the thermite dust, and we got a hive mind shaping up with the 5G here, and everybody just got to strap in and got to really reach down and be strong and start using your pineal gland, start using your bullshit meter. Don't trust people. Don't trust information until you can verify it. And nothing wrong with that. See, we got fooled into thinking we're supposed to be these waifs, man. They're uber tolerant of everything and everybody. And it's like bullshit, man. Just if the guy's a fucker, just tell him so. And, if, you know, whatever. And protect your family and just take care out there. And I really always enjoy talking, Richie. And, you know, I'm glad the connection is better to you here. And, you know, and we'll just hang in there, mate. And thanks for everything you do as well, because you're doing great work and you always have, man.
Listen, you continue to look after yourself. Thanks for the kind words. And again, folks, Dean Henderson's books. You just got to put Dean Henderson book into a search engine or go to Amazon and look for them. And if this is new to you, this information, it is for many people. These concepts, the concepts Dean has been talking about, his books are brilliant. They're terrifically well written. They're understandable. And that's all I can say about that. Godspeed, mate. Thanks again. And I look forward to speaking in the very, very near future. Cheers, Dean.
Cheers,
buddy. The great Dean Henderson live on the line from his home. Somewhere in the south of the United States of America. We've gone over time. That's no problem at all. It'll mess around with the repeats of the program on the stream. But again, that's no big deal. The show will be on iTunes, it'll be on Spotify, it'll be on Podomatic really soon. And a bit later on this evening, the show will be on YouTube as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the brilliant Tony Gosling in The First Hour and Dean Henderson. Until tomorrow, bye.